Hey, this is Aaron from Under Oath.
And this is Spencer, and you're listening to Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
All right, you're currently listening to Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions. Sound Sessions.
Sound what?
Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
You're listening to the sweet sounds of Sound Sessions. Thank you.
Hey, what's going on? This is Mike.
Hey, this is Brian.
And this is Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio. We just got done speaking to, one of the most epic bands there ever was. What did you think about that interview with Under Oath there, Brian?
Loved them. Didn't expect the phrase wiener shanked to come up.
No, that was my first time hearing that phrase as well.
Right. I was thinking it was a completely different thing, but I'm glad it wasn't as violent as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, these guys were fantastic. They have the new album out, Erase Me. It came out on Fearless Records today, which is April 6th, but this will be dropping probably in the next day or two. So, all right. So you can check us out at soundsessionspod@gmail.com. Send us an email. We always love connecting with you. You can follow us on iTunes. Brian, where can they find you?
They can find me at Lava Lamp with an H in front of the L. That's my handle for everything.
I like they could just find you in a lava lamp.
You know how that, did I ever tell you how that came about?
No, tell me.
That was my best friend's dad drunkenly said is, Lava Lamp, whatever his name is. Is he coming over yet? And that was about 20 years ago and it stuck.
The one way to really solidify a nickname is through a drunk dad.
Yep,
I feel like
definitely.
That's a good way. All right, well, without further ado, here is our interview with the amazing band Under Oath. You got the best of me. Stab me in the back. Might take you on. Might take the
For the most part, it's such a dope ass city.
It is.
The
yeah.
winner is pain.
Yeah.
It hurts.
You step out of one of these buildings down here in January, mm-hmm. and it's like getting cut in half.
And then add snow on top of
it. The snow is, it's a different kind of cold because I used to live in Utah and you live in Utah?
Yeah, Salt Lake City, yeah.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's the most beautiful snow on earth or whatever.
It's not that cold.
Not that cold.
No.
They're like, oh,
Chicago's a different level.
It's 30
of cold,
degrees
though.
Warmer today.
Yeah.
Salt Lake is like in the 60s today.
I lived in Brooklyn for 3 years and it was pretty cold, but not like this. Mm-hmm. It's just different.
Who's that lake? It's the lake, man.
Yeah.
That's what cuts you guys open is all that shit blows off the lake and you end up just getting annihilated.
And like just keeps everything colder.
Yeah. Yeah. It's your cube of ice.
Yeah.
I've never walked around somewhere and had my nostrils freeze together and been able to breathe.
Oh yeah.
And that's absolutely
that happened,
Chicago.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, let's just roll right into it. All right. Thanks again for coming out here, by the way, guys. This is absolutely awesome. Hey, what's going on? This is Michael with Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio in Chicago. I'm here with my good friend, Brian. Brian, what's going on, man?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm doing really good today. We have two of our favorite band members here. They just released a brand new album. We have Spencer Chamberlain and Aaron Gillespie from the band Under Oath. What's going on, guys?
Chilling,
just
literally,
out, man.
In Chicago.
Chilling.
It's cold in Chicago.
We were just talking about how cold it is here in the city. How does it feel to be back in the Midwest, back in the chilly atmosphere of Chicago? What do we have going on today, guys?
We love Chicago, number mm-hmm. one. It's some of our best shows ever in Chicago. But tonight we're actually doing kind of a secret pop-up type thing at the Subterranean, which we have in the Subterranean.
That's what that line was.
Yeah.
I drove past there and I was
we released 190 or 200 tickets to the public, but you had to I don't really understand how you were able to get the tickets. The rest are all radio folks.
Okay.
So the upstairs is dedicated to radio folks and downstairs is the general public, but I don't really know how they obtained said tickets.
Huh.
So for us to talk about it
was supposed to just be a radio showcase. There wasn't supposed to be any sort of general public, but I think we changed that because that's just who we are.
Yeah.
We can't do it, man. It's our band is such a live vibe of the fans and us. We really feed off of each other. I think they feed off us and we feed off them. So to just play to a bunch of radio people, no offense, guys.
No offense taken.
It's kind of tough.
Some of us suck.
We're DJs.
I'm not going to be up there in the mm-hmm. In the crowd either singing along, no matter how much I love the band. So I get it. We've never done anything with radio before, so we're really lucky to have the opportunity this late in our career to do stuff like this. And we just had to change it a little bit. Like, yeah, we need some of our kids in there.
Absolutely. And I'm sure if your fans saw that you were coming through Chicago, they would have been like, what the hell, guys? You didn't tell us about you were coming to the city?
We would, I mean, we'll do a real show here on this record cycle, of course.
Yes.
You know, but this, like,
more than one.
Yeah. But like he said, this was like a radio showcase, and I don't think that we're able to put our best foot forward with people that are important in that department without having our fans there. We're just not good at, like,
they're part of the team, you know.
We're not good at showcasing.
Right. Yeah,
it's just not what we excel in.
We're obviously not the band that, like, wears really nice clothes and stands around and you know plays their little instruments. We're more of a band that's like, it's going to be sweaty and it's going to be gnarly, right. And that's kind of weird to do for a bunch of people.
It feels better that way.
Like,
yeah.
You know, just eating and drinking cocktails, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not all fancy like that.
Yeah.
Well,
that's great.
You guys should come anyway.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm down. I will be there.
Yeah, have you been in the Subterranean?
Yeah. I mean, 150 years ago. I don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's about the size of a closet.
I've definitely played there before, like solo, and I think Under Oath played there. It's been there for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm 99% sure we played there like in 2004.
I might have done it with my solo stuff too, but I can't remember.
It's the size of like your hotel room.
Yeah, cool.
Which is fun.
That'll be fun.
It'll be disgusting. It'll be great. It'll be exactly what we want it to be.
Yeah. Yes, so. Yes. It's one of the historic venues. There's a lot of venues that have been shutting down in Chicago, so it's one of the last great mainstays here in the city. Yeah. We just had the Double Door shut down.
Really?
And I'm sure that you guys have.
Wait, no, that was the
Double Door's right around the corner from Subterranean.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a new back booth, maybe.
Oh, okay, okay.
No, was the back booth in Orlando. You're thinking about...
What am I thinking about? It's under the train tracks. It's like
under the train tracks. It's like a 500 cap room, small stage. It's new, but they moved it. The original one's gone.
Yeah.
What are some mid-cap venues? Help us out. Come on, you're from Chicago.
Is it the Double Door?
The Double Door, yeah. That's the one that... It was under the train.
Is it like
under
a newer
the blue
one?
Line.
No. Bottom Lounge.
They've switched venues. Yes.
But that's a nice venue.
Yeah, it is
for
a nice
like
venue.
A small.
No, it was a shithole.
It's a sweaty shithole.
You're thinking of the old venue.
It was under the train.
It was under the train. There was a giant pole in the middle of the audience that people would bump their heads on all the time.
It's got a nice PA and a nice stage and a restaurant in the front.
Mm-hmm.
The new building.
Yes.
Though.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I haven't been to the new one.
What's some other great Chicago venues? The Metro.
Shuba's.
Lincoln Hall's great spot too. Really intimate venues.
The last couple shows we've done have been
the Riviera
or the Aragon.
Okay, so the bigger
Aragon's huge. It looks like a Disney like somewhere you would go see like Lawrence of Arabia.
Well, that's they have like that kind of style there. Like,
it's awesome.
Yeah, the stars and the sabers up. Yeah,
it's like an old ballroom. Yeah. Like
that's the last
be...
few shows we've played have been in one of those. You know.
Okay.
I love the Riv. The Riv is really old and neat too. How the dressing rooms are like in the basement, and there's like all the old handles from the show days with the pulley system. You know, like
yes,
that shit's cool.
What do you guys prefer playing at, bigger or smaller?
To me,
sweaty shithole or giant auditorium?
A little bit bigger. To me, it's really important as long as the PA can handle it. We're a band that has a keyboard player, and you know, you're getting that to equalize with a vocal and drums and guitars. And now at the new record, we have like three more keyboards on stage. It's like, without a good PA, I feel like people are wasting their money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no matter how cool or fun it is, it's like, it's only fun for the people in the front. You know, like,
right.
What about the people that want to hear it?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, as long as the PA can handle it, small sweaty shows are fun, but big shows are fun too. It just depends.
It's a twofold thing. Look, I mean, the fans love, they'll think tonight is the best show they've ever seen. You know what I mean? Because they're up close, and we'll think it's just a sweaty mess because it is. But you know, we feel like we're putting on the best show and we're in a 5,000 cap room and there's massive LED screens and all of the shit we want. But sorry, I don't know if I can say that. But
oh, no.
It's a podcast.
But good. So like all of that stuff, you know, like we think that's great. But the fans, they think it's great too, but they would rather touch Spencer.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like that's the reality. It's like it's a twofold thing. They're going to hear better and get better visuals from seeing us at the Aragon. But they're going to talk more about the Subterranean.
Yeah.
Right. So being in a band where you're... You do both is a great thing. You know, the Foo Fighters like last year played at like the Roxy in LA.
Yeah.
Like that stuff is
I think that's cool.
That stuff that's what I mean though. That stuff cool. That's what we're doing right now. You know, that stuff is such an important part of this market now. you know.
But you can't do it all the time because, like you were saying, if we announced that this was a show, our Chicago show, so many people would be mad.
Well, then you piss off 3,000 people and you got problems.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's unfair. Like, you're going to come through and do a punk rock thing because you want to. It's kind of tough. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's great when you do it like the way he said the Foo Fighters do it. Like, they make it a thing and make a statement with it, but they're also going to come back and play.
And play the Staples Center.
Yeah, and let everyone see it.
Yeah.
But those are fun to do. If you can get away with doing both, that's the best.
Yeah. Well, you're speaking of that. You mentioned how the Foo Fighters did play the smaller venues. We had them come here play the Metro, which is our small venue.
Yeah, it's awesome. We were just talking about the Metro. I love
900 cap room.
Yeah,
I saw.
Metro is one of the greatest rooms in Chicago.
It is.
I went and saw one day we had an off day on tour. I went and saw that band Mew. They're like a band from Denmark.
Okay.
I went and saw them there, and
you should listen to that band.
Mew.
M-E-W. They put out a record about 10 years ago called Fringers.
And the one after that, Glass Handed Kites.
It's incredible.
It's really cool.
Yeah, Glass-Handed Kites. Okay, that's the other.
Yeah.
And you saw them there, and then that's a spot where you can go in.
Oh, I was like, we had an off day on tour, and I had the flu, and I had gotten these tickets, and I'd never seen them because they're not, you know, from America, and we're always on tour. I was so sick, and I went anyway by myself. No one else with the band went with me. I went by myself, and after the first song, I swear on my life, it, like, got the flu out. Like, I was so, like, just... whoa, this is so great. And then all of a sudden I left. I was like, I feel fine.
The music like truly healed you.
Yeah, dude. Like, that's so hippie, me, bro. Stuff. But I'm dead serious. I woke up the next day and was fine. I played a show. I don't know.
Damn.
I've seen some amazing shows at the Metro. Too.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite that
Alkaline
you've seen?
Trio.
Oh, come on.
They've played there.
I think they need to play three nights every time they come through,
or
because
more. I've seen four advertised there before, and it would be probably more now because you don't have Skiba anymore as much as you would want him around because he's doing Blink, obviously. So
yeah,
I've seen now when they've played, it's sold out in like 10 minutes because he, you know,
they're a Chicago band.
Yeah.
They're the Chicago band, at least in like the punk rock scene. I mean, we have the Smashing Pumpkins, and
I've seen flyers have done multiple nights of the.
When we first started like touring for real, we played the Metro on some tour, and I can't remember who it was, but I remember being like down in that room where they do merch, and thinking that the Metro was like the biggest venue in Chicago. I was convinced it could have been, you know.
Yeah.
It was the fucking Aragon to me. It was the biggest room in Chicago because I saw all those posters down there. You know, it was like Alkaline Trio three nights. And
right,
then like,
yeah.
Like
I was,
Pump,
this I was like, this is it.
The names you walk by, like, you're like, whoa.
I was like, we made it. Mm-hmm. We made it.
It's funny you say that because I have a friend who, he's in a band. It's a band called I Fight Dragons. It's like a chiptune kind of rock band. And he played the Metro, got the date tattooed on his arm.
It's a big deal.
So yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any of those venues that you played finally you felt, I've made it.
Because in our hometown...
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them. But in our hometown specifically, there's a venue called the State Theater. And how many people does it hold?
700 to 800.
We rehearse there now.
I remember when we were kids.
When we were kids, if you got one show there, it was...
insane.
And
what?
A few months ago, we were rehearsing for something, and one of the guys in the band in our band posted a thing, and it was a picture of like Spencer and I at the State Theater rehearsed there, and our gear doesn't fit on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's like that to me is like more important than even playing the rooms, because we literally just rent it. That's where we practice. So the idea of playing a show there when we were kids was like, that was the Staples Center. You know what I mean? Like that was the place.
It's like a whole
and it always changes
level.
I feel like, you know, that's part of feeling inspired to keep, you know, like you're always striving for more.
Yeah,
like as a human
thing.
Being, I feel like we're all like that. So like, after, you know, that, we would look at the next venue up and be like, oh, man, like, you know, as you got a little bit older and you met people, maybe some, like, of our peers or people we looked up to are playing other venues, and we'd go or see it. And, like, you know, we're music fans, too. Like, we go to shows all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we're in a band doesn't mean we're not participating all the time. Like, we spend a lot of time going to other people's shows. And you just see, like... a band you look up to on a bigger stage in a bigger room, hearing everyone sing along, and like you're there having a good time, like, dude, that I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do it, it's like, and then there's the next room, and you're like, oh wow, you know, like, so
are there any at this time that are like that for you?
There are some things that we can't talk about yet.
Like Wembley or something.
Oh, Wembley would be huge. Yeah. I don't think...
I think that, I mean, the next logical step, if you're looking at room sizes, is arenas.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're in like the biggest theaters now, other than, you know, some of them are huge. But I think the next logical step is like the 5,000 cap ceiling,
mm-hmm.
Which... It looks like we may get to do some of that this next year or so. So awesome. We'll see. I don't know. I mean, but like he said, that's the stuff you strive for. You know, when you start a band, it's like, we just want to practice.
Yeah.
And we just want to play one show. And we just want to play one show at this shitty club. We just want to play one show at the State Theater. We just want to sell this many records. We just want to sell that. You know, it grows and grows and grows and grows. So you look around and you realize you've gotten everything you ever wanted and you're still like...
Striving. Because I don't think it's about
next?
Greed. It's
not. No, no. I mean, that's just... been about... That's what keeps your appetite wet, right? I mean, that's what makes you... That's what keeps you going.
It's not a status or money or any sort of thing like that. It's about, I mean, just the when you're on that stage and you feel the connection and more people, like as it's getting bigger, I'm always viewing it as like, dude, I just want, if I could see everyone in the world connect to the music, like mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. if it wasn't my band, that would make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
So when I can be a small part of that, you know, at a way smaller scale, depending on or what you're looking at, a larger scale, if you're a smaller band than us,
yeah.
like it's such a beautiful thing. So you're just like, I just want everyone to feel this. So you're always striving for more and more. Like the more people, you're just like, this is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it's like a bigger paycheck or you might be more famous now or have more followers online. Like that's all bullshit.
It's a different type of connection too.
Yeah.
Because it is flattering when someone buys a record. Like, you know, to look to open iTunes this morning and see it chart mm-hmm. is really important. You know, like that's, To for your local band that you started when you were 17 to be in the top 10 on iTunes and number one on a ton of different charts, it's a huge freaking deal, right? And it's humbling and scary. But to me, what's even more humbling is that there's people in line in this shit ass weather at the Subterranean. Yeah. And that's a different connection. That's a different connection because they grab that record and they study it mm-hmm. and it becomes part of them and it becomes part of their lives. And to see that grow into something live, where you have to get into a bigger space and then a bigger space and then a bigger space because more and more people are giving that connection in a live format. It's a different connection.
Yeah,
and to me, that's the most important connection.
They're like,
you know,
they're feeling like we feel. Because me and him writing all the lyrics, it's like we've never written a story.
Mm-hmm.
In our entire Unearthed career, we've never written about something that did not personally happen. So when you're like, all right, this is kind of stuff I don't necessarily want to talk about, but I'll sing about it. And the more and more people you hear singing back at you and like it keeps going, you're just like, wow, I'm doing something positive because those lyrics are connecting. Like that hurt that we wrote about is connecting to humans.
Mm-hmm.
And you see all these humans that don't know each other in one space connecting to the same line or the same song or the same album even. Like just, you know, that's where it all... Everything's okay at that point because that's why we're all here. You know, I'm sure you guys are fans just like we are of music. At one point, there was a record or a song or a band's entire discography that just spoke to you. And you're like, that's everything. That's what I want. And if I could like figure out a way to put that in a bottle and sell it, that feeling that I get when I would hear like Nirvana as a kid, like that made me feel okay and let my friend drink it because he's not feeling it, I would have done that. But there was no other way to do that. You can't tell someone how to feel, but you can try by just writing music was what we did. So the only way to try to have people feel what you're feeling is just to be 100% honest.
Yeah.
And when you see that grow and grow and grow, that's all that matters. It's not about anything else.
Absolutely. Yeah. Might I add, is you guys are the most eloquent talkers about just music in general that I've ever heard. Have you guys ever thought about just having a show of your own? Because it's just great to hear you speak about music this way.
Funny, we get a little side hustle.
Thank you. But the truth is, we're just students of music.
Okay.
Him and I, in particular, like I have 1,000 vinyl in my living room. Like we just collect music artifacts, and our whole lives are. We'll spend a whole day talking about Mick Jagger.
Mm-hmm.
Like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
more than the rest of the band, and they love music too, don't get me wrong, but more than the rest of the band, we are students of this shit.
Yeah,
like Keith Richards' book came out. Did you get it?
Right.
Did you get it? Like that's
I got it, I finished with it, here you want it.
We live that shit.
Wow.
So this is the stuff that we enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when music changes your life, you're gonna make that your gospel, right? Like you're gonna tell people. I'm mm-hmm. sure you both have found a piece of music that you listen to or a band where you felt like it was written for you. You know what I mean? Where you're like, right. Oh,
yes.
This is about me. Even if it's something stupid.
Well, that's the connection.
Like in high school, if it's like about a girl or something like that or whatever.
Yeah, but everybody has one. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that whole, that's the goal though. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're saying. Like with when you're asking these questions, that's the goal.
That's, yeah. You know, for me, and I remember in high school, it was a lot of time and tribulations and pining over girls and putting on that yep. That opening that first album by Bayside. I remember that was like my album. Yeah. Dude, what about you? What about you, Brian? What was yours?
Tom Petty. Yep. Torpedoes.
Yours is fucking cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, man.
My dad was playing in the car, and I was like, "Oh yeah, it's my dad's music." And I was like, oh, "This is really good, actually." And then it keeps getting better and better. And then you like sit down with that album.
And when you're 25, like, it's like really
good.
Yeah,
you're like, "There's not a bad song on this." Right. Front to back.
Torpedoes is perfect.
Yeah. What's a artist or genre that your fans would be surprised that you guys absolutely adore?
I mean, I don't think it. Well, you know,
I love like alt country music, so like Ryan Adams, and that's like my favorite stuff.
Cool. Ryan Adams is like secretly a metalhead, you know?
Oh, secretly,
not secretly. I mean, like, he loves it. Yeah,
fucking Slayer shirts on stage and stuff.
Right, as he's singing these like sweet, depressing songs.
Yeah, that's my style of music that people might be surprised that I'm into. But
we don't listen to a whole lot of like quote unquote heavy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when we were writing our heaviest stuff, maybe because we're around it all the time. I don't know. I think maybe at one point in time, it's kind of what steered us in that direction to have a band like this. But I don't know. We never really were like massive fans of
for
it.
For him and I, it's always been
pop,
like pop
rock.
And classic rock.
I could see
rock
that.
Classic rock was everything. I mean, when my dad and you know we have very similar stories. Like we weren't allowed to pick our own music when we were kids. A lot of us aren't, and it was like my dad probably saw at a young age how interested I was in music. I got my first guitar when I was in like first grade. I'd take like jazz bass and all sorts of shit when I was super little. And he was like, you have to know these records before you can go off on your own. And it was almost the Beatles and then Led Zeppelin and the Stones and Pink Floyd and Jimi Hendrix and the Doors, like all the classic, the elements of like what good music was to my father, which was rock and roll.
Right.
And that's still the stuff that I go back to. The first band I got into after that was being the youngest of four. I'm like the baby was Nirvana when all, you know, before he died and everything. I remember getting Nevermind when it was before In Utero came out, and getting In Utero when it came out like on tape or CD or whatever. Like that was my reason to, I was like, oh, I can play guitar and sing. That's what I want to do, because seeing just Kurt Cobain,
which is so hard to do when you first.
It's permission, though, right?
Yeah.
It's permission at that level. Like my father, I grew up in a super conservative Christian home, and my dad got drunk every Friday. That was like when he allowed himself to be a normal human. So he would get hammered on Friday on Coors Heavy, and he had like these 500 records in our spare bedroom, and it was all of that stuff, you know, like. And I remember being 6 or 7 years old and him putting a pair of headphones on my head, and it was Pet Sounds.
Yes.
And I felt like I was inside of, like, I can't even explain it still. And that's what got me into music. Like, I remember the moment. Like, I remember. Yeah. And my dad was very much the same way. I wasn't allowed to go buy CDs when I was, like, 11, you know, 10.
Yeah.
And the first one that I actually did get was Nevermind. You know?
Yep.
So, but before that, I wasn't allowed to go buy music, so I could listen to those records. He had shown me how to like load a record. It was one of those old 70s things where you pull the tone arm over and it automatically goes down and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And the only things I was allowed to listen to was the Beatles and Led Zeppelin. And, you know, my dad listened to some yacht rock. That's the only difference. My dad was super into like Steely Dan and, you know, Hall & Oates and that stuff too, which is I think is badass.
Have you ever checked out the Yacht Rock YouTube series?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Led Zeppelin was okay. I want to be a musician, and then moving into my own when I like started getting music my own. Like Nirvana was like vocals and guitar, because like I loved Led Zeppelin vocally and lyrically, but I was like, but I wanted to be a player, you know. And then when I saw that, and it sounds so stupid, but that's how young I was. Like I couldn't put two and two together that someone could do the same thing at the same time.
Yeah.
Because I saw Led Zeppelin stuff. We had The Song Remains the Same on VHS, and I had seen different clips and pictures, and obviously you're opening up layouts, and it was always a front man, even though I'm a front man for my band. But like it didn't really make sense to start doing vocals until I got and like saw Kurt Cobain do what he was doing. I was like, there it is.
Huh. When we were in fifth or sixth grade, too, like when Smells Like Teen Spirit, that video came out, you know, in the gym and the whole thing, that was like permission. Because when I would listen to Zeppelin and the Beach Boys and the Beatles, like, that was like the symphony to me. Mm-hmm. Like, that was not attainable. Like, right. For me. Like, in my mind. Like, I was like, this is the best thing there is that exists. This is, like, the only truth that matters. But I'll never be this. I'll never be good enough. And then what Nirvana was for all of us was really permission. It was permission to be like, you can be off key and sweaty and disgusting and fucking rule.
Like, yeah, it was just all emotion.
That's what I mean. And it was emotional so much that it became the biggest record of the year.
Yeah.
That year. That nasty punk rock record. Nevermind is not commercial. And we consider it commercial now because of the success that it had, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I mean, imagine if Converge got huge. That's literally that's what it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Nirvana was permission for all of us, like in that beginning middle
but
school.
When you go back and listen to Nevermind, though, it's still, you could tell Lennon was his favorite because the structure is there. And that's why, like, when people rag on us about the new record having so much structure, it's like, that's what we always wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Aaron have been fighting that battle since day one with some of the other guys who didn't grow up on any of the stuff that we grew up on. Some of the guys in our band think Led Zeppelin sucks and Nirvana's stupid. Like, because they didn't grow up on it. They weren't like we were, like, at all. And so it was always a constant battle for us to be like, no matter how heavy or emotional or like wild it is, like, to me as a listener, I like a song to have organization, if that makes any sense. That's why I don't think having structure to your song is selling out or being commercial, even though sometimes it's what it's considered, but it's like, that's what a song is to me.
Yeah.
Since I was born, songs have had reoccurring parts until Under Oath.
We're zero, and how do you get back there? I mean, I think that's the thing, is like, you know, we like certain songs because of the way it makes us feel. And it's a little bit self-aggrandizing to only let your listener feel something one time. That's the structured conversation that I have, and that's why Nevermind was so good, because you had the feeling of angst and the feeling of like, this is punk as shit.
In a Beatles song.
And a Beatles song.
Yeah. Right.
And that's what gave us permission.
Right, slow it down and then listen to them.
Yeah.
Completely different. And then you hear all that.
Yeah. Like the Nirvana Unplugged, the MTV Unplugged thing is like,
oh, I saw that live on television. When
so did I.
That's huge.
That was
life changing.
That could have been the Beatles.
Right.
No, but think about, because you had all those songs slow down. You know what I mean? You had all of that with Dave singing full harmonies.
He did on the records.
Pat Schmier was there,
singing
at that point as well, playing guitar. Mm-hmm. Like that was one of that's.
Dude,
like,
I miss the MTV Unplugged more than anything.
Why don't they have it anymore?
I hate there's acoustic.
There's some form of it now.
Well, I've seen the VH1 Storytellers. I think was the most recent like incarnation of it.
Okay,
I've never liked acoustic performances. Like hearing them on the radio, or we get asked to do them. We're getting asked to do them all the time now. Like I don't ever really like them, but like something about MTV Unplugged, like, because it sounded good and it was mixed and there was drums and there was bass and there's everything about it. It was like, dude, the Alice in Chains one, the Pearl Jam one, the Nirvana one, the Stone Temple Pilots one, dude, those, I mean, that's all the stuff that I loved, like 90s grunge.
God, Lane Staley looked like shit on that one.
But he could sing better than Christina Aguilera, you know what I mean? Like he has that control, or he had that control, like that. I mean, those fucking MTV Unplugged were so cool.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Dashboard Confessional got to do one, and we kind of grew up with Chris Carrabba, and I remember just being chartreuse with envy, because I knew that Under Oath would never be a candidate for that, ever, especially at that time.
At that time?
We weren't popular either at that time. This was, you know, like 2003, and he got to do it, and I saw it live, and I was like, fuck, man. He got to do MTV.
But I think it's different now, because I think if it was a thing, bands would ruin it. Like with laptops and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like those,
they'd have stipulations.
They had cello players and violinists playing with like Nirvana. Like it was like to create that sadness and that somberness.
The way he looked in that, just that whole thing was like.
Do you remember Soybomb? The guy who, I can't remember who was playing, but there was one person from the audience who jumped on stage.
With Dylan.
Was it with Dylan?
I think so.
Yeah. And he had Soybomb written across his chest. And it was just a protest thing about veganism, I think.
Wow.
Don't
Bob
listen.
Dylan?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was like at MTV Movie Awards and Bob Dylan was presenting
something. Was an unplugged studio thing and he just was dancing
That's
around.
So cool.
And just how raw that show was made it really cool. And because you're talking about how stripped down the sound was. It was a very new thing. I remember one of the first stories about Unplugged was they had Squeeze going on play Unplugged and they brought their electric instruments and they go, okay, we're already plugged in. They're like, this show is called Unplugged, you can't play your electric instruments. And they're like, oh, so they needed to go out and get whole new instruments and acoustic instruments to bring to the show.
You know which one is fucking wild is the Jay-Z one. Have you watched that one?
No.
You should go home and watch that tonight. That one is incredible. Because it's Jay-Z and Jay-Z doing what Jay-Z does with zero DJ.
What do they use? Like lab drum kit?
It's a band.
Band.
Guitar player, acoustic guitar player, bass player, drummer.
There is one. Have you ever seen the T-Pain Tiny Desk concert?
No.
So you know how T-Pain has that auto-tune? Yeah, like they have auto-tune named after T-Pain. He has like an angelic gospel voice. It's amazing.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, look it up. Look up Tiny Desk T-Pain.
That makes it worse now.
Jaw-dropping.
Now I just want to tell T-Pain, if you ever listen to this, just sing, dog.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that.
He just did a little tour on it.
If you can sing good too, man, like just sing.
Yeah, and everybody like in the office is just like,
face. It's not my damn, not my jam. I cannot vibe on that digital.
There's certain things about it I like. I liked Imogen Heap and
she does it right.
And all, some of that stuff is so
that's like
artful.
Art. It's like
so no Kanye 808s and Heartbreaks when he busted out that.
I can't deny Kanye anything ever.
I think Kanye's got some good stuff. I like
Kanye's with Rick right now. Did you guys see that?
Yeah,
Ruben.
Yeah.
Really?
It'll probably be a masterpiece.
I mean, whatever Rick touches.
I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff about
the last Kanye records.
I love, but not.
Oh my! It is
not
really
the
good.
Auto-tune parts, man.
I get it. Like,
don't feel in it.
Hip hop is a hard topic for me because there's so much of it that I think is like the most mind bendingly creative thing there is, and there's some of it that I just don't understand. Like the really massive stuff that's out in the world today, I don't understand. Radio hip hop.
You're not digging Molly Percocet.
I can't understand any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like you can look at Jay-Z's last record and be like,
that was great.
This dude's a fucking 444 genius.
Is awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like this guy's a genius. This is literally spoken word that matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Run the Jewels is great.
Run the Jewels.
Yeah.
Run the Jewels. So good.
Fantastic.
But there's some stuff.
There's so much musicality to it. Like listen to the Run the Jewels record, Run the Jewels 3, and like I mean, if you deleted the vocals, you could have like Tom York sing over it and it would still be badass.
Actually do
you
that,
know what I mean? Like, it's crazy.
And you just look at
you
their lyrics,
You can find the Run the
too.
Jewels docs. I mean, the Run the Jewels tracks with no vocals. They exist. You can find them.
Or Cats. Yeah. You see that?
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, I mean.
Cats?
Yeah, they redid one of their albums with just Cats on it.
I like that.
Those dudes
That's the kind of
shit.
Stuff that makes me happy.
They're awesome.
There are electronic things that's beautiful. I mean, like he said, Radiohead or Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Like
Lord's great.
I know Lord's last record wasn't as successful as the
loved
first
it. I thought
one,
it
but
was
I
the best one.
Loved it.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I saw that Green Light song.
I saw that performance on Saturday Night Live and it blew me away.
Yes,
that Saturday Night Live performance blew me away.
She was one that did that. I saw her at Lollapalooza when she first came out, and I was kind of skeptical going into it, and just grabbed you.
Right,
the whole show. You're just like this 17-year-old girl.
She
is
believes
just blowing
it,
my mind. Oh yeah,
she I think that's it. The. I think that's what we're really talking about now. Mm-hmm. Is what is the formula for music? To make it important, like, and I don't mean like media important, but just important to people. And I think that's just intention, right?
Mm-hmm.
It can be hip hop. It can be, we just talked about 8 different genres technically, and they all have one thing in common, and that's intention. You know what I mean? I think that's really it.
Mm-hmm.
You go see a hardcore band and you go see Jay-Z and you're really feeling a lot of the same thing if they're both genuine. Right. You know what I mean? You're getting that same thing. Jay-Z might be at Barclays and the hardcore band might be the Subterranean, but there's still a vein of musicality that they both share. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's
I
really
feel
what
it.
We're talking about. I think
it's hard to shine through that genuineness or sincerity with music nowadays, especially with social media being such a huge presence. How do you connect that genuineness with your audience now? I suppose it's an interesting thing.
I think it's really tough. I think. For us, we're so behind on the social media game because we tried to rebel against it because we are fans of people like Trent Reznor and Maynard and the whole like mystery and rock and roll. That turns me on. Like I remember as a kid, like never seeing what Tool looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you went and saw it live, like that was so fucking cool, man. Like,
that's right.
Like Trent Reznor is so like mysterious and I never knew what to expect and like is he still going to be alive like next year? Like, I, you know, like as a kid, just like, oh, I never know what's going to happen. And with social media, it's totally different and you have to embrace it, which we have now. But we waited really a long time that, and it kind of, it's sad that it bites us in the ass now because we're a band that can sell a lot of tickets, not tooting our own horn, compared to bands in our genre. And we were getting shit on with when we're trying to take out bands on tour because they're like, yeah, but our Spotify numbers and our Instagram numbers are millions past yours. And that's a valid argument for the industry people now. They're looking at those numbers.
It doesn't matter that we have platinum and gold records on the wall. It doesn't matter.
To them, it doesn't. It's all about, and we hadn't put out a record until today or whenever this airs a couple of days ago. That even when Spotify was even a thing until now. So we're fighting this battle where we're like, we sell so many more tickets, but your band has a million followers on Instagram and can't sell 200 tickets. And there's actually an argument here on whether you'll support our band because you think you're worth more. And we're just trying to make a great tour for our fans. And it's like a nightmare with social media now. It's like, are those numbers real? Why do numbers matter? It should be ticket sales that matter, but it doesn't right now. It's confusing.
We got over-romanticized about rock and roll. Like you heard, you hear us talking about it and how I talked about, you know, on Nirvana MTV Unplugged, like when I saw him, that was half the battle for me.
Yeah.
That was half of the show. When I saw the way he looked in that fucking sweater, you know, like I remember that. I'm 35 years old, dude. Like I remember that. You know, I remember seeing Tool.
Mm-hmm.
And when Maynard came out with some fucking
blue paint,
blue shit all over him, I was like,
is this
crazy? You know what I mean? And we have romanticized with that thing for so long that we want to walk out on stage and be like, this is what we look like. This is who we are. Well, God, watch how crazy it's going to be.
Yes.
And that doesn't matter now. Like everything, it's
no. They want to see
like the, it's like the Dave Eggers book, The Circle.
And, oh yeah,
you know everyone has to be
you know it,
accountable in some way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It does and it doesn't because you know you're saying that, but you know I'm sure there's people out in the crowd that feel the same way.
I'm sure.
You know,
of course. Yeah. I'm obviously general, like massively, grotesquely generalizing.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But
majority are looking at the spins and you know how many followers.
But it's weird. Yeah. Like, and he's right. There's bands out there that can sell. That can't sell out the Subterranean with 6 week lead.
Mm-hmm.
That the singer has
a million followers
on Instagram
because
he's attractive.
Or, you know? You're seeing a lot of those bands come through too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't even know if what it is. It's just a lot of people play that game, and I don't think it's necessarily wrong or right. It's like, if that's what you're into is taking pictures and keeping your fans up to date, I've seen it now. In hindsight, I look back as like, oh man, like we made a mistake because we thought we were too cool for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like we thought it was cooler if we left them wanting more.
Mm-hmm.
And now, just with the way the world is going, and you can't fight change.
Right.
You know, it change happens every day. And I feel like we look at it now and go, yeah, man, like maybe we should communicate more and try to update people more because that's
but
what they want.
How do you do it with class? I think that's the real question.
Well, like we were talking about Ryan Adams before. He always puts stuff up of PacSam, but it's, you know, of his cat on the board or something like that.
Yeah.
Like a snippet. You know, you can have fun with it in a way.
Sure.
Do you guys find yourself having fun with
having
it?
Having fun with like Instagram?
No.
Not at all.
No. Reluctantly. Like,
you want to know the truth?
I'm getting yelled at for not posting enough and I'm trying to...
The truth, I wish it didn't exist. Oh, I wish none of it existed.
Agreed.
It'd be so much cooler.
Mm-hmm.
Everything would be so cool.
Mm-hmm.
I was so much less stressed out, like as a musician, as a professional musician, before any of this shit happened. And I'm not saying I'm an old guy. I want the old stuff. I love that it helps bands out. I love that it keeps people connected. I'm not like, you know, divvying out bigotry right now, but I don't. It physically stresses me out because we messed up in the beginning, because we fucked it all up for ourselves in the beginning. Now everyone that works for us is screaming at us all the time. You didn't post enough. What you posted wasn't a great angle. I'm like,
and then when you post, everyone just—it's just like so many people arguing for no reason. It's like,
yeah,
I've said this the other day. I feel like when we grew up in school, we were bullied. That you look different, you listen to different music, you like were skinny, or you rode a skateboard, and you weren't like a football player. You got beat up, you got made fun of, you got called words that we are not even allowed to say anymore. Like all that shit happened.
Yeah,
and then they took it away. And everyone that goes to school is pretty safe as far as bullying goes. And now it's just online.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so now you can type it, but you can't say it.
We grew up being bullied in high school, and now we're bullied online. It's like,
right.
Our age group has it the worst. It's just like all those kids just go home and just go. It's just it's madness. Right,
like I think emoji bullying. Like
that seems so much worse than just getting it right to your face. To be honest, yeah, I would much rather have my lunchbox like knocked out of my hand or something.
That probably happened to you. You're the way you're talking about it. It sounds like
it did. It did.
Yeah,
I remember that.
It happened. We're all about the same age, right?
Like, yeah,
right.
Yeah. It all happened to us.
I remember waiting in line freshman year, first day of school, getting lunch, and I was in line, and this big varsity football player was behind me, and I paid my own money to get the food, and he goes, "Let me get that." And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "That's mine." He's like, "I'm on the football team." Took it off my plate. Lunch lady didn't say anything. No one said anything. Walked out and ate it.
Joke's on him.
That's
he's got
how, brain damage. That's how. That was just like normal life. You had to live with that fear every
he's
day.
Got brain every damage.
Yeah, my lunch. Joke's dude, no on wonder him. I'm so skinny. I never got to eat. Bully myself.
Oh, dude!
Taking your chicken nuggets.
I was so unathletic as a kid.
Mm-hmm. I looked six when I was in high school. I didn't know.
I looked like a chubby girl because I always wanted long hair so I could be like Dave Grohl.
Yeah,
of course. So I would go and then with the neighborhood kids that I went to my school, I would try to play football, like to fit in. And I would
at least
just
you tried. I did not.
I would
that.
Get bloodied and get my ass handed to me, and they'd be like, "Go home, redhead." Go home. You're going to get hurt out here. And they're right. Probably mostly all in jail now.
Yeah, yeah, probably. I remember like the same thing with the lunch line. I was sitting there and a big huge and by the way, when you're skinny and you're a freshman in high school, you're very very small. Like I look at freshmen now in high school,
they look like a 6-year-old.
Yeah, no,
now they look like older than me. They have full beards
right?
And like
you watch
strong
full beards.
I can't grow a beard.
Mutton
still.
Chop sideburns. Yeah.
I can't grow a beard.
Same. Yeah. Hey, you know what? When everyone else is old and they make fun of our baby faces.
Yeah. No, it's paying off for me now.
But it's illegal. It's like illegal to be a bully now. My son, I have a 6-year-old, right? And I get a phone call the other day. I'm out here and it's his mom. And she goes, "So Joel pushed someone on the playground today." And it was like a huge deal. Like it was a huge deal that he pushed another boy. Like they were just wrestling, like being kids. But it was a massive problem. She was like, "What do we do? What do we do?" And I'm like, I literally got shanked in school. Wiener out shanked. Like,
oh,
as a kid.
No,
seriously?
No,
I swear to God. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well,
I had my
you need
head,
to tell us how you got wiener shanked.
Sorry. No, I mean, I got my head slammed in lockers.
Oh, okay. Me too.
My son was jumped. Just play wrestling with another kid and got a letter sent home that's like, "You know, we're really worried about your son's progress as a member of this student body."
Oh, come
and I'm,
on.
But that's where we live. That's our lives now, right? And I'm not saying that, like, I think tolerance is a huge deal and we should be careful with our children. But it's funny because when I was a kid, I got wiener shanked. Fucking.
We got to hear this wiener shank story. Yeah, what was
the
scenario?
What is wiener shanked?
You like shank, like not just your pants, like your underwear too. Dick out.
Like okay. They pulled both of them down.
I was thinking like shanked with a wiener. Or
it's, are you okay?
I don't know.
Maybe your mind is the one we should worry about. We had taken a field trip we're from Florida, and there's a spring there called Wikiwachi Springs, and the water's like super clear and 100 feet deep, and you can see turtles and stuff swimming around, blah, blah, blah. I was always a chubby kid. So I kept my shirt on all day, like all morning. And then they kept calling me words we can't say anymore because I kept my shirt on. So I took my shirt off, and I got this.
You got pants.
This a diabolical sunburn, though. I mean, it was the color of that fucking recording light. Like this diabolical sunburn. And I was putting my shirt back on at the end of the day, and I was in so much pain. And I was trying to be cool and like suck in, and I had like, you know, I was like 12 or whatever, and I was the color of a lobster. Like I went home and puked for 2 days. I had sun poisoning. But as I was putting my shirt back on, this dude walked up behind me, and everyone was standing like by the vans, girls, teachers, wiener shit.
Yeah, dude, and teachers used to laugh.
Oh,
I remember that too.
The little fucker that did it didn't even get in trouble.
Right.
If you pulled someone's underwear down in my son's elementary school today, I would probably go to prison. Like, if my son did that to another kid, I would probably be in prison and have all my wages garnished or something.
Mm-hmm. There are so many times that I can remember when a guy would, he'd put his hand down his pants and then rub it across your face.
And also,
I remember many times this happening and going to my teacher and saying, please, like, this is what he did.
That's
and she goes,
fucking crazy.
She goes, you know, there's something I could do about it, but it already happened. I didn't see it. And I'm like, you didn't see it? My face is like,
Think about that as an adult, like having a kid tell you that. Like, I would have a hard time not laughing at a child telling
you.
Right? Like, come on. Yeah.
You just heard me laugh. Like, I mean, that shit is.
It's bonkers. But you know what? It does help you become who you are. I feel like I'm a stronger person now because of it. Now, if you get wiener shanked, I mean, I could walk away from that situation.
But I still got vitriol about it. You know, like,
yeah.
I have kids from high school. That when we play in town, we play like this real big show, you know, like this real big show, thousands of people show, not tooting our horn, but I'm setting it up for you. And he'll text me, can I get tickets? And I literally still ignore him on fucking purpose. It's good. He deserves it.
Right.
Seriously, though, dude, like I'm still in that place where I'm like, I still got bones about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You've been through some shit, and then that's your life, and it helps you grow as a person.
Yeah,
you know, F the haters.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like you said, I'd rather have it to my face and someone, because I think there's a lot of people hide behind a computer screen now, and I think it's just, dude, you wouldn't say that. Like, you see it you see it with girls too. Like, people leaving comments like, oh, I'll tear that ass up. I'll do that. It's like when a girl posts a very pretty picture or something, like how nasty people can be. I'm like, yeah, but out of all those people, I guarantee you 0.001 would say that to your face. You know, right. So it's like, we all have it bad. Like, anyone that's in sort of any sort of spotlight, it's just nasty people saying the nastiest things because they can get away with it.
Well, society has created I read in the New York Times the other day, like a screen culture. Like, we've created like it's something that's never existed in history. You know, we've had hate crimes in history. We've had famine in history. We've had, the market crash in history. You know, we've had all of that stuff happen. We've never had this in history. It's never existed. So no one knows what to do. You know what I mean? Like this whole screen theory thing that we live, this life that we live, we've never done it.
Yeah, we're writing it right now.
And it's insane. You know, the Chicago fire has already happened. So if it happened again, someone would know what to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't be the same way as it was. So we're literally living, you know, we're writing a future, and it's strange. Like, it's really strange. And we could, all we have is speculation, and that's why things are the way they are. That's why online bullying exists. That's why, like, all the online sexism exists, because no one knows what to do. You know what I mean? And all the sites are trying to put up bots and things that can combat online bullying and all this stuff, but we're still writing the programs.
Exactly.
We don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's trippy. Do you guys ever watch Black Mirror?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's like we're living in a Black Mirror episode sometimes.
My fiance loves Black Mirror.
It's great.
It is.
Show.
With the current political state of our nation, with everything that's going on, it's fucking confusing, man.
Yeah.
Like, we're literally like on a roller coaster, and there's no stop button. And you are trying to find ways to like brush your teeth and take a shower while you're getting thrown around simultaneously. You know what I mean?
It's
like you can't, like, your middle existence that we all live for so long is not. Anyway, yeah.
It's heavy. Well, guys, I can't thank you enough for joining us here on the show.
And getting way off topic.
I knew it was going to spin into something good.
Wiener Shanks.
Did not expect
from
that.
From Led Zeppelin to
Wiener Shanks to politics.
Yeah.
We didn't even
That's good radio.
We didn't even touch on gluten-free yet.
You know? I don't eat gluten.
Well, let's make a quick mention of the new album, Erase Me. It's by our good friends over at Under Oath. This album is fantastic, and congratulations on it. It's the first album you put out in 8 years, guys. I mean, this is so huge. Does it feel good to be back in the saddle and back on the road, putting out some good old fashioned Under Oath music?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's
like our life. It's always been our life. Like, we did take a little break in the middle, and I think that's, you know, you get a bunch of teenagers in a car touring around the world, that it ends up going well and things keep progressing, you're going to eventually fall apart at some point.
Yes.
We didn't get a chance to grow up like everyone else, and we had no college experience. We had a lot of real life skills were kind of robbed. You see a lot, but you also get robbed of a lot. Like, you see things you shouldn't see, probably, but you also don't experience a lot of things you should. But you also get to experience things that most people won't. But it you know, like, I think we burnt down the building and there was a foundation left on the ground, so we decided to rebuild it smarter. It just took some time.
It's better on the other side. Like, yeah, you know, post 30 under oath is so much better than pre 30 under oath.
If we would have never broken up, we would never have been the men that we are now, and we wouldn't probably have made another record or two.
And I don't, like,
there was no way to...
The band would have been successful either.
Yeah.
I think we would have written stuff that didn't connect.
It was not a part of the plan. People say all the time, bands break up to get bigger and all this stuff. Say, for us, I mean, it was straight up like having your best friends in the whole entire world looking at each other going, I don't ever want to speak to you again. You know, and people are just like, it's like when your family goes through something. That's the only thing I can compare to people that don't have the experience that we've had. It's like, I've had falling outs with my brothers. I've had falling outs with my mother, you know, like all those sorts of things where you don't speak for a while and you're angry and like you're just trying to wait to figure it out, and the smoke settles and you get to a point to where you can move past it. And if you do, and you do it successfully, like as a relationship, things are always better.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes a bad thing to, you know, shock the whole system to make some really good shit out of it. And I think we're all closer than we've ever been. And it took us to like get to that point where
we were able to cut all the bad out, you know. It's like having surgery, invasive surgery for something. You're a better person when it's over, when you can cut all the sick out. But like,
yeah,
it hurts to have surgery. You know what I mean? So for us, that's literally what it was. We had to cut all the bad out, and I think we made the best record we've ever made. And that's not like one of those things where you hear band members, they always say that, like, this is our newest record, it's our coolest shit, so we're only going to play these songs, make everyone mad. Like, I really think that this is our best record, and to see people's reaction, you know, this many years later, and people excited and making the album chart and driving to different stores to get different versions. And, you know,
a lot of people saying that's their favorite Under Oath record as well, which is, you know, that's everything to us. Cause
that's all that matters the people, you know. I read a comment today, my favorite comment from today, and obviously everything's inundated today because the record launched today, is someone said, how did you guys know to write this for me? Like, whoa. You know, like the connection with the lyrics. Like, how did Spencer and you, it was on my page, how did you and Spencer know to write this stuff down for me? It's exactly what I needed. You know what I mean? That to me is like, that's the ultimate win, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Like, when you guys see that, does that just make it all worth it for you? Everything that you've gone through?
For sure.
I think so. Yeah. That's the whole goal. Like we were speaking about earlier. It's like bottling up that feeling that made you feel okay when you're a kid to let your friend drink it, because he's not getting it. And when you have other people, you know, that's what brought a lot of people together, like why bands started. It's because you were all vibing on the same stuff. It all made you feel the same way. So when you see that returned, like kids being like, you know, this song, the lyrics, this album or whatever, like that made me feel like, oh man, it's about me, it's about my life. Like I felt that way 100 times growing up. And without those records, I don't know if I would have made it. You know what I mean?
For
I feel
sure.
Like kids, when they get that feeling, that's the whole point. That's why I ever started writing lyrics. That's why I ever started singing, is because it'd be so frustrated when my friend wouldn't get the same feeling I got from a song. I remember like I keep referring to Nirvana because that's the biggest memory I have, is like, I was like playing this record and my best friend was like, yeah, I mean, it's whatever, and kept playing a video game. And then I was like, well, what about this song? What about this one? And he was just like, it's not really, I was like, you're not hearing it. Like, I was like, man, I just wish, like what's happening inside my body, this guy could feel, because I cared about him so much because he was my best friend as a little kid. You know, we like did everything together, but he just wouldn't get the music that I got, and it was so frustrating. So writing it and having people say that is like everything.
That's so true. The album is fantastic, guys.
Thank you. I
love it. Came out today, April 6th. The album is called Erase Me. From the get-go, I mean, it has to start somewhere. Great opening track. I love where the album is going. Where's the first spot on the tour?
Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, this tour, that the first tour off of this record is like a kind of a... We had a bunch of festivals that we wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of just strung the festivals together to avoid flying every day, so we could... kind of get the kinks out for this new stuff, you know. So this
yeah.
is like what they call in the industry, it's called a B market tour, which is B market means like
small
you're not
cities.
Playing Chicago, New York, LA, Dallas. You're playing like Corpus Christi, Texas,
right.
or Memphis, Tennessee, or, you know, places like that. So it's kind of a cool way to gear up for you know, everything we're going to do in the next 2 years.
This is going to be huge. I'm really, really excited for what you have in store. I can't wait to see you hopefully back at Riot Fest in Chicago, maybe? Who knows?
We hope so. We played it.
2 years ago.
It was so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It was like, dude, we played, and then I remember like another one of my favorite bands is the Deftones that I grew up listening to. Every single record, you know, like I was there for every release, like just like... And we've gotten to play with them a bunch. We've never gotten to tour with them, but I literally look up to their... Everything they do is just... Normally, it's like perfect to me. I'm like, damn it. Damn it, I wish I wrote that. You know what I mean? Like one of those bands. And I remember us playing, and like there's the two main stages are like side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked down the little steps they have, and then Deftones started playing. I was like, yes. I loved Riot Fest, so I hope so. That would be tight.
Yeah, I mean... We'll always see. Come back. We'll see.
But we'll be in Chicago for sure. We'll be everywhere.
Right on. Guys, this was fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us here on Sound Sessions.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Can't get enough of Sound Sessions? Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter @SoundSeshPod, and check us out on Instagram @SoundSessionsWGN.